This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The book we're talking about today is Am I Dying? Should You Chill Out or Freak Out? As I said to our guest, I wish I'd thought of this title because it's a great hook for talking about a variety of symptoms. And what do you make of them? Symptoms like, I can look at the chapter heading in here. We talked about forgetfulness. We've talked about unintended weight loss. Going through some of the symptoms here. What if you find that you're experiencing nausea and vomiting or constipation or back pain or shortness of breath, leg pain, swollen feet, itchy skin and rashes? Well, what are the potential meanings of these conditions? Do they portend some kind of horrible outcome for you, or, are they transient conditions that can easily be treated? That's the theme of the book. Before we get to some additional conditions, Chris, I noted in talking to you a little bit before the show that you're completing a very arduous training program there. What's it like? You went to med school, and that's a 4-year program.
Yeah.
And then what do you do to complete your medical education?
It's an embarrassingly long road for doctors to get trained these days. But the good news is, by the end of it, you have seen and done a lot. So the typical physician, after completing 4 years of college, goes to 4 years of medical school, after which one becomes a intern for a year. That's
AKA slave.
The term intern sort of conjures up like an unpaid lackey at a business. An intern in the hospital is still a lackey, but they're paid, and they are doctors, so remember that.
I think I remember being paid. I think my paycheck was about $14,000 per year. I think that worked out to about 93 cents per hour that I spent during my 110-hour week. Well, it was a 110-hour week, so.
Yeah, so that's a pretty grueling time, as I'm sure you recall well. After internship, one does a residency, which can range in duration from another 2 years in the case of internal medicine or family medicine to another, I think it's 6 or 7 years in the case of neurosurgery and cardiac surgery. And then after doing residency, at which point you're anywhere from 3 to 8 years out of your medical school, many people opt to do a fellowship, which is even further training, which can be 1, 2, or 3 years in a sub-specialty. And you come out of that, highly skilled, ready to take on your first job in your mid to late 30s. Now, 6
and ready to pay off your enormous
school.
Medical debts, your medical school debts. Yeah.
So, so it's a long road, and it requires obviously a passion for what you're doing, commitment to your patients, but it leaves you pretty well trained at the end of it.
I wanted you to comment on a recent development, which is in the headlines this week, which is that the World Health Organization has recently recognized a new ICD-9 code, as if we needed more. I think we already have 120,000 of them. But it's for a condition called burnout. They've actually recognized burnout as a true psychiatric entity. For which you can code and obtain reimbursement and treatment for it. And I find it ironic that the very profession that has decided to enshrine burnout as a medical diagnosis subjects
probably
its
suffers from it the most.
Yeah, right, exactly. Subjects its trainees and indeed, the professionals who deliver day-to-day care to burnout.
Yeah, well, I think most physicians, you, me, and most others who are listening, understand that burnout is very, very common. Most of us have experienced it at some point in our lives. It's, you know, this feeling that the work that previously gave you joy and satisfaction has just become too much and you feel like you can't do it anymore. I think the statistics said something like half of physicians experience mm-hmm. burnout during any given year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people have looked at what the reasons for that might be, and I think in medicine a lot of people blame it not on patient care, which is usually the reason people get into medicine, however grueling it might be, but all of the bureaucratic work that now comes with the practice of medicine, all the paperwork and prior authorizations mm-hmm. yep. and sort of unfun things that doctors have to do over the course of the day.
I think an antidote to a burnout, though, is something that you've engaged in, which is a creative endeavor, writing a popular yep. book. You know, so, yep. You know, it sort of enables you to kind of lift your head out of the day-to-day realities of the challenging medical scene in yep, a busy
absolutely.
Hospital and write something for the public, you know, which is a little bit of what I do with this podcast.
Yeah, you've certainly done that in spades as well, and I agree. It's if you can find some sort of creative outlet, something that you're excited about doing each day that's sort of different from your routine, it can certainly help. But, you know, but people need to recognize that burnout is real, and, you know, the vast majority of doctors are really doing their best, but it is tough work. And I know there's been research looking at burnout and medical errors and burnout and sort of poor patient care, and the two are definitely related. And, you know, as we think about reshaping healthcare in this country and new systems of care that various politicians are proposing, it's something that needs to be considered and addressed, because if not, it's going to keep causing problems.
Yeah, and if your doctor's not happy, it's not likely you'll have a happy outcome. So let's get back to work, because you know, after that digression, we need to get back to
something more happy,
right? Something that potentially could engender burnout, which is talking about patient problems. An instance that occurred to a family member, and interestingly, he's a physician. He's an inveterate skier, and usually hits the slopes. And he's been noticing that, you know, as he's now in his 70s, his skiing performance has declined a little bit. He recently came back from a ski vacation where he was at Aspen, at an altitude of, I guess it's about 8,500 feet there.
Yep.
And on the slopes, you know, once you get up there, it, you know, it could be 11, 12,000 feet. That he was really too breathless to do any kind of skiing. So he spent the entire expensive ski vacation sitting around reading novels in the ski lodge.
The most expensive novel he's ever read.
Exactly. But he was quite concerned about that.
Yep.
What are some of the possible scenarios that can come out of that?
Yeah. So altitude sickness is something that affects most people that travel to altitudes, like whether they're skiing or they're like mountain climbing or just traveling to a city that's at a very high altitude. And many people will experience a little fatigue and headache during the first day or two as their body acclimates. You know, basically the underlying problem is that the pressure of oxygen in the air at higher altitudes mm-hmm. is lower. And so sometimes because of that, you breathe a little faster to kind of keep up more oxygen into your body. As you breathe faster, you blow out more carbon dioxide, and that kind of shifts the acid-base balance in your body. And as your body compensates for that, you may have some symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, if you have underlying lung disease, the drop in the oxygen concentration can be a real problem. So people with asthma, people with lung disease, like chronic lung diseases, like interstitial lung diseases, can have a lot of problems when they're at high altitudes. Because just like, you know, unlike in an airplane, which pressurizes the chamber, when you're up at the top of the mountain, there's nothing helping you, and it can unmask some problems that may not be evident at low altitudes.
Mm-hmm. So in the given instance, you know, this guy is well-connected. He's a physician, mm-hmm. retired at this point, but he had, you know, the million-dollar workup, and I think he even went to Columbia to get an opinion. what the biggest concern was, you know, maybe this is the onset of a valvular disease, right? Because when the heart valves aren't holding the blood back properly and you have something like aortic regurgitation, you might be experiencing increasing shortness of breath. In fact, that's how it sometimes emerges that people like Mick Jagger needed TAVRs procedure.
Exactly.
You know, maybe he was jumping around the stage during a rehearsal and, you know, he couldn't do his usual gyrations. And that was, you know, that was that.
So that's a good example of a lung problem becoming evident at high altitude. So in this case, you know, the lung problem is not coming from a problem intrinsic to the lung itself, but rather from a heart valve, for example, or heart failure or anything in the heart, which can cause fluid to back up into the lungs and can interfere with normal gas exchange when you take a deep breath in and out. And, you know, you can be fined, you know, in New York City, but when you go over to Denver, your lungs, you know, being compromised in the way that they are, can't keep up anymore. So, you know, that can unmask the problem. So was your friend or your colleague diagnosed with a heart valve problem after all?
Well, it was interesting. What happened was they couldn't really find anything wrong. And so he was left to his own devices. And what he decided was, I've been sitting around like a lump of lard, especially now that I've been retired, watching too many Yankee games, and sitting on my duff in the Lazy Boy. He embarked on an exercise program and a diet program, lost about 25 pounds. The last I talked to him, he was walking 9 miles a day as part of a daily exercise regimen.
Wow.
And, it gave him a jolt. But fortunately, I think, the answer is that there wasn't anything really insidious going
just
on.
Just out of shape.
Yeah, and, just deconditioning.
The out of shape became even worse when he was up there.
Yeah, and it manifested more. And, you know, as you get older, sometimes it puts more of a burden on your circulatory system to schlep around 20 or 30 extra pounds.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly possible. I think it was good for your friend.
Best possible outcome.
Something like that, too.
Right.
To check things out and make sure there's no underlying medical issue. But
It was a teachable moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Has he been back up on the slopes since?
I think that's, you know, next season we'll see.
The next test.
Yeah. Unless he goes to the Andes or something over the summer.
Sure.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Here it goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Herpanosine Skin Support. Your skin is your largest organ. Treating and preventing serious, unsightly, and at times painful skin problems must be done from the inside. That's why for over 28 years, people worldwide have experienced safe and positive results with the award-winning vitamin formula, Herpanosine Skin Support. Herpanosine utilizes the finest quality gluten-free non-GMO vitamins, herbs, and amino acids, as well as antioxidants. 11 powerful and proven ingredients, which work together synergistically to support skin health from the inside out where it counts. It's manufactured in an FDA-licensed facility, and it's backed by science. Healthy skin starts from within. Get Herpanosine Skin Support online at diamondformulas.com or by calling 888-467-4200. Use the coupon code Hoffman for free shipping at diamondformulas.com or call 888-467-4200. Herpanosine Skin Support. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuous free resource to you. And now, back to our guest, Dr. Chris Kelly. Here's another one, and kind of a related problem. Swollen feet. You know, in this warm weather, a lot of people get swollen feet. You know, they sometimes will take their shoes off and their feet are all red, and maybe there's a little indentation when they push in around, you know, their feet or their ankles. Maybe it extends up to their, you know, mid-calf. What's up with that? Is that potentially a normal problem, or is it worthy of medical consideration?
Yeah, another extremely common symptom, and one we cover extensively in the book, swollen feet. So as it's getting warmer, people are wearing open shoes or sandals, and they're looking at their feet and toes a lot more than they do in the winter when they're wearing big boots.
It's hot, and the feet expand sometimes in heat.
Yeah. So number one, you just see your feet more. So a little bit of swelling that you may not have noticed other times of the year, you may just see more in the summer. If you're standing up more, if you're traveling, you're on your feet more, you know, the longer that you're vertical, the more likely you are to get a little swelling in your feet at the end of the day, as gravity just sort of keeps the fluid down there. But what's not normal is to have fluid in your feet at the start of the day when you wake up and get out of bed. And it's also not normal to have so much fluid in your feet that you can sort of press your thumb or any other finger into the skin. And when you move it away, there's an impression still of that. We, as you know, call that pitting. And it's certainly not normal to have swelling that goes up, you know, above your ankle into your calf or, God forbid, your thigh. So when we see that, and doctors encounter it often, as I'm sure you have thousands of times over your career, there's a lot of things that we think about. As a cardiologist, of course, I'm wondering about the heart, because any problem in the heart can cause pressure to build up in the veins, and that pressure gets transmitted all the way down to the legs, where blood can't enter the veins as efficiently, and fluid kind of leaks out into the legs and causes swelling. But there's other things, too, that can cause that. Problem with the veins themselves. So as we get older, especially, the veins that drain blood away from our legs can start to fail. The valves that sort of keep fluid in the veins from leaking back downward away from the heart can fail. And
that's a natural problem that's associated with aging. It doesn't necessarily require immediate medical attention.
Nope. Doesn't require attention unless, of course, the swelling is bothersome or it's so severe that the skin starts to break down or there's just a cosmetic issue. So problems with the veins are very common. Problems with your liver and your kidneys can also cause your legs to swell up. So if your liver is not working so well and you're not making enough protein, sort of the chemical forces in your blood and the fluid outside of your blood vessels can get screwed up and cause more fluid to stick around in the skin. Same with the kidneys. If you're peeing out a lot of protein, as people with kidney problems sometimes do, that balance in inside and outside your blood vessels can get screwed up and fluid can stick around in your legs. Thyroid problems, low thyroid function, can cause swelling down there. And those are, I would say, the main things that doctors are thinking about. If you have a swelling on just one side,
that in itself is a little more insidious, right? Then that could be a portent of something bad.
Yeah. So if one of your legs is swollen and the other leg is not, and that's a new problem, it could just be that there's a vein issue you never noticed on the one side, but it could also be that you have a blood clot in the leg on one side.
Which could be dangerous, could cause, you know, life-threatening pulmonary embolus if it travels to the lungs.
Yeah. So, so those are, you know, the main things that, we as doctors think about, you know, as a person.
Even cancer, because a cancer could, you know, compress, one, lymphatic or one, venous, return pathway and then cause the swelling. That's a possibility too.
Yeah, definitely possible. Less common, thankfully, than the other things, but it definitely happens. So I would say that, you know, if somebody's looking down at their feet and they look a little puffy to them, or they think they're having cankles and they haven't been gaining weight generally, like, you know, in other parts of their body, you know, what they should do is, number one, determine, does it happen more towards the end of the day after I've been standing for a long time, and does it get better after laying down and sort of elevating your legs above your heart? If it does and the swelling is very mild, it's probably nothing to worry about. If the swelling's there all the time, or if it's, you know, deep enough that you can push in your finger, like I said earlier, and leave an impression, that's swelling that you should definitely talk to a doctor about so you can have a basic workup for the problems I listed.
Okay, here's another one. Tremor. You know, you notice that your handwriting is deteriorating a little bit, you know, or as you grab that coffee cup, you know, hear that that clatter on the plate below it. What's up with that? Does that mean you're inevitably going to get Parkinson's disease or some sort of neurological condition?
So that's, of course, what people rightfully worry about. Parkinson's disease, one of the main symptoms is tremor. But thankfully, there's a lot of other things that can cause tremor, and frequently there are things that aren't so dangerous. So number one, some people just have tremor that happens for no good reason and seems to be genetic. So sometimes people in
some of your fellow medical students who opted for a career in psychiatry instead of surgery were maybe under that rubric,
exactly.
Right? You know, it turned out that when they held a scalpel, it looked a little shaky.
So yeah, exactly. So in your 20s or 30s, often that's like when you're in medical school, you may notice a tremor that usually gets worse when you're doing something. So it's not really present when your hand is at rest, but when you're, you know, lifting a cup of coffee or a spoon to your mouth, the tremor gets worse.
So-called voluntary tremor.
Yeah. If you have a tremor like that and one of your parents had a tremor like that and the tremor gets better after having a glass or two of wine,
that's the so-called gunslinger effect. That's why they always hung out in the saloons before the gunfight, right?
Exactly.
Steady their hand.
That's something that we call an essential tremor. You know, you should still see somebody to make sure that's what you actually have, but that's probably what you have.
It can be really bothersome, but it's not going to result in a body-wide deterioration over time and, you know, threaten your life.
Yeah, usually not a sign of something more dangerous, but it can interfere, obviously, with the quality of life. There's a couple medicines that you can take, something called a beta blocker, which is used for a lot of different indications, can help with that tremor. Obviously, drinking alcohol every day is not really a good long-term solution.
There's even some deep brain stimulation that they're talking about pioneering to treat more severe cases of that.
Yeah, which is pretty incredible. And, you know, for people who have tremors, there's all sorts of devices that one can use that sort of cancel the tremor. You know, because the tremor happens at a fixed frequency, the devices can sense that frequency and create an opposite motion that sort of cancels out the tremor. And those are becoming more common, and that's great to see. Tremors that you might worry a bit more about. So if you have a tremor and you're also feeling hot all the time and you're having diarrhea and maybe even having palpitations, that can be a sign, again, of thyroid problems.
Hyperthyroidism,
hate to keep bringing up the thyroid, but it can cause a lot of different symptoms, and a fine tremor is one of
them. That's hyper with an ER, folks, because a lot of people hear that kind of quickly and they go, oh, I have hypothyroidism. No, hype, that's the opposite. It's much rarer than hypothyroidism, but it can make you feel more revved up.
Overactive thyroid, for sure. Some people who have like problems affecting a part of the brain called the cerebellum, which is sort of the base of the brain, that can get disturbed in conditions like multiple sclerosis, after like a head injury and other things, that can cause a tremor that can get progressively worse, and it's something that a neurologist will probably check out for anyone with a new tremor. The Parkinson thing, obviously it's concerning. That's, unlike the other tremors that we described, that's a tremor that happens more at rest. So actually while you're sitting quietly, not doing anything with your hands, you have this tremor, and it's sometimes called like a pill rolling tremor, like you sort of rub your fingers against each other. And then when you use that hand, the tremor gets a little better. That's a little more concerning, especially if you have other signs of Parkinson's, like your movements overall have become slower, you shuffle a little bit when you walk. You know, because there's so many different kinds of tremor, and it can be hard for somebody with a tremor to figure it out, sort of, in any case, something you want to see a doctor about. I guess the takeaway from this is that there are benign causes.
And I might suggest a neurologist, actually, because I have to say that with some of my patients, you know, even with my internal medicine training, they're a little bit hard. It's hard to discern, and neurologists are exquisitely attuned to the nuances that distinguish benign tremors from something that is a portent of a more serious problem.
Yes, there's a whole language about tremors in which most neurologists are fluent. They can describe the frequency, when it occurs, and what situations it occurs, and can help narrow down the diagnosis. But anyone with a tremor that has been evaluated definitely should get it checked out. And as you say, a neurologist is the right one to see.
Okay, great stuff. And, you know, there are many more instances of situations like that. If you have a lump on your neck or a spot on your skin, or any number of symptoms, these are addressed in the book, Am I Dying? Great concept, and congratulations to you, Chris Kelly, and to your co-author, Mark Eisenberg, for this. It's a great hook. It's a great way to invite people into a discussion about common medical problems. And you did a really masterful job with the book. Book is available, usual sources. And Chris, it's reassuring that we're raising an entire new generation of astute physicians like you.
You're very kind.
I wish you all the best in your career now that you're going to embark on, practice beyond your initial completing your fellowship training, which I understand was this week, this very week. Congratulations.
Indeed. Thank you. Well, thank you very, very much for having me on the podcast and for your kind words about the book.
Oh, indeed. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As I continue to look for more ways to fulfill my pledge to provide the information you need to make informed choices about your health and wellness, I've developed a simple way for you to access curated supplement protocols previously available only to patients in my private practice. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. There you'll find easy-to-follow links to not only the best individual products, but also to my brand new Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle Supplement Protocols that combine the products I recommend to achieve your specific goals, whether it be heart health, immune support, and much more. It's the easiest way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need in order to follow the Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll also receive free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.